Okay. Okay, just to go back again, because we ended with this yesterday about this Mishnah, about the Nitiot, right? Hare Nitiot, Elu Korban, Imeinam Niktitzot, and the Talitzot Korban, Imeinam Nishrefet. We're trying to figure out the reality, what exactly is going on. I struggled to really figure out. I think the best way I understand it is like this. Kahati brings up the Rosh here, who says that part of the issue with this Mishnah is the dream. It's all based on Dvarim Shebalev Enam Dvarim. That you, in your heart, all you meant was, I don't want them to burn today, or I don't want them the wind to blow them away today. But you didn't say that. Okay, we saw this in, do you remember the case about the guy who wants to go, you weren't here yet, the guy who wants to go to make Aliyah, and he sells his house, Amanat, to make Aliyah, and then in the end he can't make Aliyah, and then he wants his house back. So, you know, if he didn't stipulate it, right, Torim Shebalev Enam Torim, but there's a machloket there, but how to, or this, forget exactly how it works out, but that's the real question here. So he didn't really specify about it. The other issue that the Rishonim struggle with is, how did we like flip to Nidre Hekdesh all of a sudden? You know, we were talking about these other Nidarim, how did we get to Nidre Hekdesh? What is this doing here? The answers aren't so satisfying. The fact that they ask it at least is, you know, makes it feel a little better. But so basically we enter this world of Hekdesh. There's also Machloka when he says Harei Nitziot Elu Korban. Do we mean he meant it's Korban, like it's real Hekdesh? Or is it like Kikorban, right? It doesn't say Kikorban, right? But Kikorban means they be Asurim Alai. But since the Mishnah seems to talk about Pidyon and not Pidyon, it seems to work better if we say he really meant it was Hekdesh and these really are Nidre Hekdesh. The other thing that we struggled with, which I don't really 100% understand, but I think I do, which is that what's the status, right? Again, depending whether you go with Barpadra or Ula, according to Ula, it could be this whole thing is irrelevant. If you never cut them, right? And then even if you never, if you never redeem them, right? If you redeem them, according to Barpada, what happens? They become kadosh again, right? If you redeem them, according to Ula, we don't know what happens exactly. We don't know what Ula says. That's a whole machloket. But if you don't redeem them, according to Ula, and then all of a sudden, right, they get uprooted, you cut them, they already have no kadusha. So it almost becomes somewhat irrelevant, according to Ula, according to that, right, according at least. We don't know what Ula says before that, but what Ula says is that after they already get uprooted, then your neder is no longer anything. In which case, if you're not poder and you just wait, then it's fine. According to Barpada, it becomes a very chamor situation because even if you cut them, you still have to redeem them. The question is just if you redeem them before. Now, what's this thing about redeeming and redeeming again and redeeming again? And this is really going to provide the intro to the sugya for today, which is that the assumption is that when he said this, what did he mean? Hare, right, the second case. Talitzo korban or nitiot elu korban ad shi katsitsu. Okay, so now, I did not come up with an answer for what happens for the next crops that grow. Are they included? I think they're not. I think we're talking about the crops that have grown and until they're cut. I don't think it means for the future, you know, like let's say it's fruits, so for the next set of fruits also. Tough to, I couldn't find anyone who really related to it. But the other thing is, if you say Hare Nitziot Elu Korban Ad Shiyiktzitzu, so that according to Barpada, who says, you know, every time you do pidyon, they immediately the kedusha is chal again. The assumption is that when you made this statement, what did you mean? You meant that I'm going to keep on being mafdish these, right? That I'm going to do another hektish, until they're fully, right, until achi tzitzu. Okay, so that means that basically the way we view your statement is that your statement means I want to make these hektish again and again and again and again. But that's what you meant in the first place, that until such stage as they're yiktzitzu, they're uprooted, you're going to basically, you want to be makdish them over and over again. And then you'll see we're going to compare it now to a different case as a result of that. Okay, so now. We are starting at Kaf Tet Amud Bet at the bottom. Yativ Rabbi Avin Rabbi Yitzchak Berebi. Okay, Rabbi Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi. Kameja Rabbi Yirmiah. Okay, so Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Yitzchak were standing in front of Rabbi Yirmiah. Become an amnim Rabbi Yirmiah. Rabbi Yirmiah falls asleep. Yate v'ka'amre. So now they're sitting and talking. And they say like this. Lebarpada da'amar p'da'an chozrot v'kodshot. right? That every time you redeem them, they're going to keep being hekdesh. Tifsho debai Rav Hoshaya. Maybe we can use this to answer Rav Hoshaya's question. What was Rav Hoshaya's question? Hanoten shtei prutot lisha. Somebody gives two prutot, okay, two coins to a woman. Now, in order to marry a woman, you need to give her a shave pruta, okay? So he gives her two prutot. Now, amarla, this is a very interesting statement. You'll find this fascinating. Ba'achat hitkachili hayom. With one pruta, I want to marry you today. Uba'achat hitkachili la'achar sha'agarshech. And the next one, I want you to marry me after I divorce you. In other words, I'm giving you two prutot now, and they're both going to be valid, right? One's going to be valid today, and the next one's going to be valid in the event that I divorce you, I'm going to remarry you. Okay, which is right. Very strange statement. Why would he say that? Why would he divorce her then, right? But I guess he's saying, if I ever get so angry at you and I divorce you, like, I'm going to want you back. So this is my... going to be Makdishu Achshav. So now, that's his question. What are the issues here? The issues are, number one, we know that you can't be makdish davar shelo ba'al olam or koneh davar shelo ba'al olam. You can't do a kinyan on something that doesn't exist. So, right, the second marriage here doesn't exist, so to speak, right? Not only that, but the second marriage, if it were, right, it could exist, a marriage could exist here. He could marry her, but he's already marrying her, so therefore there's no validity to the second marriage at this point. And it's useless to say, I'm marrying you to someone who he's already married to, is useless. So basically, this after the first kiddushin is chal, there's no room for the second kiddushin to be chal. So the question is, if at some future point there's a room for that to apply, will that work or not? Okay, because generally you say, if you say something useless, it doesn't count as a kiddushin. So what do they say here? So based on what we said, it's the same as the guy who stands there and says, my peiro, right, my nitziot, are going to be hekdesh, ad shiktitsu, which basically means, if I were to redeem them, I want to make them kadosh again. If I were to redeem them, I want to make them kadosh again, right? Until such time as they get, right, this has an end time. The marriage doesn't have an end time, right? Because he says, right, now, so much as I divorced you, I want to remarry you again. Okay? So it's got a similar thing in that he's basically saying, when this one runs out, right, when this one or gets redeemed or gets divorced, right, I want it to happen again. So since it can work here, even though here also, a hekdesh, the first hekdesh, right, when he does the first hekdesh, so obviously he can't do a second hekdesh, it's already kadosh. So it's the same type of thing. Okay? Again, what do we see? This comparison between hekdesh and kiddushin, right? Which is a very, the one thing I came up with is that possibly the similarity is not just this because the words, right, kiddushin, but that what happens to a woman when she becomes married, she becomes forbidden to everybody else, which is sort of like hektish, right? It becomes forbidden to everyone except for to God. Okay, so maybe that's where the similarity is coming from. So that they make this comparison to answer Rav Hoshaya's question. In the meantime, Idar Buhu Rabbi Yirmiya. Rabbi Yirmiya wakes up. Here's what they're saying. Amar Lehu, my Kamidamitun. Why are you comparing these two? Okay, right? Midamitun Dame. How can you compare these two things? Pida'an Hu le Pida'um Achirim. Okay, you can't compare when he redeems it himself and other people redeem it. Now, it's a very strange Lashon, and the way that Mefreshim explained it to me doesn't exactly match the Lashon. But what do they explain? That when you redeem the field, what happens? The field goes right back to you. Right? You redeem the field, it becomes yours again. So now you can re-makdish it, right? It's in your property. There's room for the new kiddushin, the new, not kiddushin, right, but the new hakdasha to work. But if you say, in the marriage case, what's the problem in the marriage case? In the marriage case, what happens? He divorces her. When he divorces her, does she go back to his reshut? No, right? She becomes her own free agent, so to speak, right? She's free to marry anybody right now, and she doesn't belong to him anymore. So And not only that, but it needs her approval to remarry. She has to agree to it. It's not just a one-way street. When he makes it hektesh, it's just him. Okay? But if she does, right, if she's part of the picture, then it doesn't exactly work. So there's really two issues here. One is that she can say, I'm not interested. And the kiddushin can't just be chal without her agreement. Second of all, and more importantly, I think, is that when he divorces her, she doesn't go back to his reshut. She's no longer his property. So therefore, it's not the same as with the field, because or the fruits, or whatever it might be, the tree, right? The tree goes back to his reshut, so then the hektesh is chal immediately, because again, this statement he made, ad shiktsitsu, means, kol o, that this belongs to me, I always want it to be hektesh. Okay, so you can't compare the cases according to him. Some of the Mefarshim say, just because he says this, just he's saying you can't necessarily make the comparison, but some people think that you, even though you could still, like in a case where she agrees, that maybe it would be okay, and maybe this would work. But in other words, it's not clear cut, but he's saying you can't necessarily make the comparison. And now he says, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Pida'an hu chozrot ukedoshot. Pida'an achirim ein chozrot ukedoshot. Okay, and here we see that Rabbi Yochanan said exactly this, that when it comes to the field, if he redeems it, it becomes kadosh, but if somebody else redeems it, then it's not kadosh anymore. Okay? If someone else redeems the field, then the hektesh that he originally did doesn't work again, which, by the way, could be another way of resolving this. He could have someone else do the pidyon, maybe pay them back at some point, but, right? And then he gets out of the situation where it doesn't have this kedusha come back again. Okay. Itmar Nami, and another person also says the same thing. Amar Rabbi Ami Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu ela shepida'an hu, aval pida'um achirim en chozrot v'kedusha. Okay, so Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yochanan both agree that if someone else is to do the pidyon, then it's no longer that original statement of his. Basically, what happens? The original statement of his gets broken, right? It gets kind of, there's a break in the middle. And once there's a break, then it can't rework itself. Okay. Now we're going to get into a whole bunch of very easy Mishnayot and easy Gemarot that are basically talking about if you said a certain phrase, what did you mean by that phrase? Does that phrase include these people or those people? And this is very clearly, okay, and we're going to see the first one's interesting. The second one, Dafka, is the more interesting one. I think it's the second, anyway. Because it shows you about what was going on in their society. Right? Because obviously, these same terminologies that they're using wouldn't necessarily be true today. Okay, so if they said one thing, it included this category of people. But that statement today might mean something else. Okay, we'll see soon when we get there. Hanodir mi yordei hayam. If he says, I am not going to get benefit from, what do you call them, seafarers, right? People who go in the sea. Okay? He's mutar bi yoshvei hayabasha. Okay? He's permitted for people who don't travel in the sea, obviously. But if he says, mi yoshvei hayabasha, he's asur mi yordei hayam. If you say the flip, yoshvei hayabasha, people who live on land, he's also forbidden to people who travel by sea. Sheyordei hayam bichlal yoshvei hayabasha. Okay, because even people who go on the sea don't live forever on the sea, they also live on land. So if he says, I'm not going to get benefit from any land inhabitants, that's going to include even people who go out in the sea. Lo ka'ele shochim mi'ako liyafo, ela b'misha darko lifrosh. Okay, what does this mean? They're saying, when we say, okay, now we're going to see in the Gemara, there's two different ways to read the statement, and on what is it, to what, which line of the Gemara, the Mishnah is it referring to? We'll see the two different explanations in a minute. But this statement means, basically, that a Yordei Hayam does not include people who go from Akko to Yafo, because, what's with Akko and Yafo, think about it, it's very short, and not only that, but you can keep along the coast. You don't have to go out into the water, right? Out all the way into the sea. Okay, so you need someone, and they say, and you know, it means like you're going out in the Mediterranean. You're not going like on a river or on something, right? It means you're really going out for a long ride. Rav Papa, Rav Acha, Bereit, Rav Ika. Okay, so Rav Papa and Rav Acha, the son of Rav Ika, have a machloket. Chab matnei resha v'chab matnei seifa. One says this line is referring to the resha, and one said it's referring to the seifa. Manditanei resha, the one who says it's on the resha, on the first part of the Mishnah, matnei hachi, reads it this way. Hanodir mior yedei hayam, mutar b'yoshvei hayabasha, right? So if you say yordei hayam, you're mutar in the yoshvei abasha, the people who live on land. Habi yordei hayam asur, right? So therefore, what do you infer from here? Who's forbidden? The yordei hayam. Which yordei hayam are forbidden? Velo ka'ela ha'ochim me'afo li'afo, dahalan yoshvei yabasha ninhu, ela b'misha darkan lifrosh. Okay, so that means, right? We're basically...
Lifaresh.
Lifaresh? Why lifaresh?
Lifrosh means to drop out, but lifaresh means to...
Lifaresh is that excluded.
Lifaresh means to explain. How about this? Lifrosh layam, aren't you? Like you go out into the water? It says lifaresh?
Yeah.
I don't think it was lifaresh. I guess here also it says lifaresh. Okay. Lifaresh.
It's definitely not lifrosh. Why is lifaresh? I don't know.
Lifaresh bayam. Right, it would be. I thought it was lifrosh layam, like your poresh layam, like you leave, you separate to go to the. Okay, it says lifaresh. Okay, fine. Lifaresh.
Yeah.
Right, lifaresh means to separate. Lifrosh also means to separate.
I think it means like here it means excluded. Exclude.
I don't think it has more to do with
sea. No, I think it means to go out into the sea.
It means,
right, to separate yourself and go far out. That's what it means. But you say lefaresh, lefrosh, I don't know. It's a good question. Kati also has lefaresh. Right. Okay. So now, if you say, so now, according to that interpretation, right, what are we saying? We're basically limiting we're being more mekel here. That if you say, I will not get benefit from the Yordei Hayam, it doesn't include those, right, Yapo and Akko. Okay? But if you say it the other way, Uman de matnei seifa matnei hachi. Hanodir miyoshvei yabasha, asur biyordei hayam. Velo be'elu halchim me'ako liyafo bilvad, ela afilu b'misha darko lefaresh, ho'il v'safo liyabasha salik. What does this mean? Here it's more inclusive, right? It's more machmir. It's saying, if you're nodir miyoshvei yabasha, it includes the yordei hayam, and it doesn't only include the yordei hayam who go on small trips from Akko to Yafo, it includes even the people that go on long voyages. They're also considered yoshvei yabasha, because in the end, they're going to end up back on the yabasha, right? And they'll eventually end up there. Okay.
Except that if you explain it according to this way, then it's not adding anything to the resha, because we understood that from the resha. Because I said there are.
And Odir Mi Yordei Hayam, according to this.
And Odir Mi Yoshvei Yabasha means.
No, what he's saying is this. You're right. It's not adding so much because Yoshvei Yabasha is from Yordei Hayam. It's just saying that you might have thought that it didn't include the Yordei, the ones who were really going far out. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then the first line, Odir Mi Yordei Hayam, would include apparently both Akko and those who were layam. So it would also be more inclusive in the resha, according to this. Okay, new Mishnah. Hanodir miro'e achama, asur af besumim. If you say you're not going to get benefit from those who see the sun, okay, at least that's the way it sounds. We're going to see in a minute, we're going to translate it a little bit differently. Those who see the sun are forbidden even to blind people. Why? Okay, it doesn't mean that you can see the sun. It means the sun can see you. In other words, people who are exposed to the sun, you could say, right? That would be a better way of saying it. Anyone who the sun reaches. So now what do they say? My taima, how do you infer that this is the case? It doesn't say from those who see. It says from those who see the sun. Those who see the sun means, oh, the sun sees them. Okay? If they wanted to exclude blind people, they would have said from people who can't see in general. So why they add the sun? It must be where the sun doesn't shine, right? That's who he wants to exclude, right? So now what they're saying, who is he excluding then? Doesn't the sun see everybody? La fuke dagim v'ubarim. Okay, the dagim don't see sunlight because they're underwater. And the fetuses don't see sunlight because they're in the bodies. Now there's a whole question, right? What kind of benefit did you get from fetuses, right? I don't know the answer to that question, but that's a question that the question asked. I didn't see an answer, but definitely gets asked. okay. Hanodir, here's the interesting one historically. Hanodir mishchorei harosh, from black-haired people. Asur bekerchin ubaalei sefot. There must not have been blonde people in those days, right? What does it say? It talks about bald people, and it talks about people with white hair, okay? So it includes even bald people and even old people, okay, who have white hair, or anyone who has white hair, even if they're not old.
Because their hair used to be black?
Right, so you could say because their hair used to be black, but actually the Gemara is going to give a different explanation. Umutar, here's an interesting one, binashim ubiktanim, maybe all women color their hair. Mutar, we'll see, that's not the case. Umutar binashim ubiktanim, she'in ein nikrein shchorei harosh ela anashim. Now we learn that shchorei harosh was a way that they called men. They called them black-haired. Black-haired people are men. Why, we're going to see in a minute. Gemara, my time. Midalo ka'amar mi ba'alei se'ar. Okay, we can figure this out because it doesn't say people who have hair, okay? Because if it said people who had hair, then it would exclude bald people, okay? But since it doesn't say that, it must be including the bald people. Umutar v'nashim u'biktanim she'ein nekra'in shchorei harosh ela anashim. My taima, anashim zimnin demichsu reshayhu, v'zimnin demegalu reshayhu, aval nashim le'olam michsu, u'ktanim le'olam miglu. Here we have a great historical statement about what went on in their times. Now we're talking about the Gemara anyway. That, right, trying to understand the Mishnah, was presumably the time of the Gemara they're talking about. Men sometimes cover their hair and sometimes don't. So now everybody jumps here. What do you mean? Men, kippah, you know, you have to wear a kippah. Where does this come from? There's a big question. Where it comes from? It's in a minhag, right? Clearly it's a minhag and less of a chovah, although maybe some people see it more as a chovah. But some people claim that this has nothing to do with that, because what this just means is that their hair isn't entirely covered, okay? And you can see their hair through their hair covering. And maybe that means, yes, obviously they have a chovah to wear a kippah. This is just talking about that their hair is completely uncovered. Other people say, no, here you have a source, and there are times when didn't walk around with kippot all the time or some sort of covering on their hair. Because sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. It wasn't at all an issue of a chovah, and it wasn't something everybody did. So there's some interesting food for thought. Okay, and here we have the women. Women always covered their hair, so therefore they would never be called black-haired people because their hair is always covered, right? Again, this doesn't necessarily mean they have to cover their hair, right? This just shows what people were doing in their society. And the last thing is the ketanim, who always have their hair uncovered, which is interesting. I don't know what they mean ketanim here, because certainly the sources talk about that even pnuyot would cover their hair of women. Maybe ketanim meant young boys. And then it's interesting, right? If the men went with kippot and some sort of covering, but the kids didn't, right? Nowadays people are mocked with it anyway, certainly from a certain age. You know, again, the question is, what does ketanim mean? Does ketanim mean really ketanim? Or, you know, already 5, 6, 7, right? Interesting. Okay, so according to this, the ketanim never covered their hair. Again, it's unclear what age we're talking about.
I'm interested that they parsed the language that precisely. If he would have, if he had meant bald people who were not bald, given that we're sort of looking at the assumption that the nadarim are things you say when you're out of control or when you're angry or when you're making a thoughtless statement.
Uh-huh. Right, well, the whole question is, though, how do we, and this is going to be the next sugya, really, the next Mishnah, we're going to really get into it, which is, when you say something, how do we know what you meant by it? In other words, what is the general way that people speak? So they're trying to kind of do a survey, right? Maybe they went around and asked people, when you say shchorei harosh, what did you mean? You know, and that's what they're trying to basically figure out. Whether he was angry or not, he still said a statement and a phrase. That the question is, what does this phrase mean? We all know that we get into tons of situations where somebody says something and we don't know what they meant by what they said. What did you mean when you said this? And when you, right? There's lots of misunderstanding. I mean, it's interesting because a lot of this masechet is all about misunderstandings, right? What did you mean? What did you say? And what was the intent? And it's very confusing. But yet you can see why it would become so confusing. And as times change, and obviously language changes with time, it becomes even more complicated. How do you read these things and how do you understand them in the context? You know, nowadays, if anyone said black-haired people, they clearly would mean black-haired people and not blonde and not gingy and not
bald.
Right, and not bald. So this mishnah would be understood very differently today if somebody were to make that neder, because we don't speak that way anymore. But also, and it could be even in the Gemara they did, but the Gemara had to understand the mishnah. And what was the mishnah saying? So the Gemara, you know, doesn't just want to say, oh, well, that's how they spoke then, and we speak now differently. But they tried to come up with some sort of explanation.
Well, maybe the implication was at that point in time they didn't have to wear a haircut.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I think for sure that comes out of this sugya. That's what I was saying. That one way of reading this, and I think it's the pshat here, is that men weren't necessarily covering their hair in those days. And I think it's a very, you know, I think it's a pretty clear source. Again, I'm just giving you the flip, which is other people say, no, it doesn't mean that they weren't covering their hair. It means that their hair wasn't entirely covered. They had some sort of head covering, but you could see their hair, as opposed to the women who were covering their hair in a different manner. So, but I agree with you that I think the pshat of this is that men weren't necessarily covering their hair. I actually gave a shiur once. I didn't have a chance to look at my sources on it, but Professor Zimmer, I think it is, has an article. He has a book. I forget the name of the book right now. It eludes me. But he has a book where he discusses different minagim that developed and or maybe some halachic stuff. And he has a whole article on Kisei Rosh, and I once gave a shiur on it. I don't remember all the Kisei Rosh for men. I don't remember all the sources and what it came up with, but it clearly seems to indicate that there was not a lot of, you know, it certainly wasn't viewed as a chovah in those days. Yeah.
From an evolutionary perspective, if you really think about it, there shouldn't have been any blonde-haired people here.
Oh, here we have the geneticist.
You know, blonde-haired people work north.
Ah, very, okay.
So
there were no blonde-haired people then, which makes sense.
Yefe,
right, who was an Admoni. Right, we had a few redheads, but interesting.
But
Yefe.
Very unusual.
Okay, there you have it. Thank you.
But why did they say that any bald-headed person was...
had hair originally, right.
Could potentially be...
Right. Right, you could say that, but that wouldn't help. Right, and the white-haired people, the same thing.
Yes, yes.
Right,
exactly.
It was definitely an easier way to go, but the Gemara didn't go that way. Maybe because the Gemara also had to explain why women weren't included, because women also have black hair and
maybe
term white
not
and
a term. Again, what you said. Now we get
right. So that's what the Gemara was trying to say. Why is it so? Why is it a term more for men than for women? And that had to be explained because women cover their hair, and men don't necessarily. And that's why. That's what the Gemara comes up with. Again, you could come up with, I've told you many times, just because the Gemara explained the Mishnah this way doesn't mean that you can't come up with your own explanation of the Mishnah and an alternate explanation. It doesn't necessarily mean that's what the Mishnah meant. That's how the people in the Gemara understood the Mishnah. There's definitely validity to explain the Mishnah otherwise.
What if the Mundel is included in the group that he's forgetting himself from? Like the Mishnah Yavashah, what does it even mean to him?
So is he forbidding himself?
Himself from himself?
Right. And what about his wife? And what about, right, in other words,
well, it's okay, you can understand.
You can understand what? Maybe he doesn't want to get hana from his wife either?
Wife, but to maybe say, I'm not getting hana from myself, like I'm not.
Maybe it's just not called that you're getting hana from yourself. Maybe hana is only something you can get from someone else. Like you can't benefit yourself, you are yourself, right? You can't, it could be viewed that way. And therefore, you can do what you want for yourself, but you can't get benefit from any other human being other than you. Right? It's a definite strange statement. I mean, if he says Yoshvei Abashai, he's basically including all people, and then it's a strange way to live. Why would he be doing that? It's definitely, you know, again, we've talked about this also, that sometimes they're bringing realistic cases, and sometimes they're just, you know, kind of giving examples that could teach you maybe about other things when you be misupak about it. How do you treat this phrase? How do you treat that phrase? You know, some phrases include other things, and some phrases are mutually exclusive. And that's, I think, what they're getting at, basically. And maybe they also brought it as a hashva'ah to the Yodei Hayam, to maybe say, it's more like if someone would say Yodei Hayam, and we're just comparing this to what it would be Yodei Yabashah. Yodei Hayam doesn't include Yoshvei Yabashah. I'm sorry. Right, your Yodei Hayam does not include Yoshvei Yabashah, but if you would say it at the flip, it would include it, but not really thinking that anyone was really going to ever say that. You know, you could say that. Okay, new case. Hanodir min hayilodim, mutar banoladim. Min hanoladim, asur min hayilodim. Okay, yiludim, so the Gemara is going to assume, yiludim means those who are born, and not those who will be born. That's those who have been born already is yilod. And nolad, right? We always talk about nolad. What's nolad in halacha? It's something that doesn't exist yet, right? It's just born now. It's just being born. So nolad, right, like in Dine Shabbat, nolad is something that's new, that was just created on that day. So if you say Yilodim, you must mean those who are already born. And you're excluding basically anyone who now is born from after you made that statement is going to be mutar to you. Min hanoladim, but if you say from those who are going to be born, asur min hayiludim, then you're basically forbidden to those who will be born. And if you say the word nolad, it means both future and the past, according to Chachamim. Rabbi Meir matir af b'yilodim. Rabbi Meir says, we're going to explain this the way the Gemara says it, because I think that's also the pshat here. When you say min hanoladim, you're also forbidden to the yiludim. In other words, nolad, I'm sorry, you're also, yeah, sorry, the word af is going to be the confusing word here, and this is what the Gemara is going to ask about. But if we erase the word af for right now, it's basically Rabbi Meir saying, if you say min hanoladim, you're asur min hanoladim, but you're mutar of the yiludim. In other words, the yiludim is not included in noladim. Noladim means future, not past. That's what he's basically saying. Bechachamim omrim, lo nitkaven, what's their retort to him? Why do they think noladim is asur also be yiludim? Because lo nitkaven ze, ela v'misha darkoli hivaled. When you said noladim, you mean those who were born, right? Those who were born, meaning human beings or animals who were born from their mothers. Okay? So now, Gemara says, L'Rabbi Meir, v'lo mabayi noladim, ela miman. In other words, what's he talking about, Rabbi Meir? He says, Rabbi Meir, matir af b'yiludim, even the yiludim. So what does it mean? Right? Min ha-noladim asur min ha-yiludim, and he's matir even the yiludim, which means what? If you read the literal way of reading it, it sounds like even the yiludim are mutar, and obviously the noladim are mutar. So according to him, everything's mutar. So if you're no dirman and no ladim, you don't mean anybody. So that's what they're saying. Below me by no ladim, alam iman asur. In other words, so who is he asur from if he says that? If he's not asur, even from the iludim, which means, right, even must mean no ladim, he's mutar from the no ladim, and even, right, and af min a iludim. Okay, which obviously isn't what Rabbi Meir means, but they're basically saying, why do you use the word af? What is af referring to? Af seems to say even this, meaning in addition. So what's it in addition to? So it's clearly not in addition to that. So chisurim b'chaser b'hachi katani. This word's missing, and this is the way it should read. Hanodir min hayiludim mutar b'noladim. We're back to Tanakama now, right? The same thing. If you're nodir min hayiludim, then you're mutar b'noladim. Min hanoladim asur b'yiludim, right? Tanakama is very chachamim. They're very. This is what you said. It means only that and not the other. Either you're talking about past or you're talking about future. Rabbi Meir Omer, af hanodir min hanoladim mutar b'yiludim. Just like you said in the Reisha that Hanodir min hayiludim is mutar b'noladim. Sorry, I said that wrong. Right? Chachamim said noladim asur. Right? Sorry. Chachamim, I didn't say this. Right? Chachamim said yiludim is. Right? Which one did they start with? Sorry. Right? Yiludim is mutar b'noladim. Right? Yiludim only means past, but noladim means past and future. Right? It means both. It has both b'mashma. So comes Rabbi Meir and says, no, I think just like you said that yiludim means only past, I think that noladim means only future. Understand? That's what he's saying. He's saying the af means even the noladim is very specific to only what the phrase means and not including the past. Okay, that's what he's saying. So the af refers to the first statement of Tanakhama. Saying, Yiludim, you see mutar b'noladim. I see even noladim is mutar b'yiludim. Okay, whereas you think, your second statement, you thought wasn't just past, wasn't just future, includes the past. I think, no, just like you said, the first statement is just that phrase and not any other mashma'ut. I think noladim is the same way. So the af is referring to that and not saying, in addition to this being mutar, that's also mutar. That obviously isn't what it means. Okay, so Rabbi Meir, Afa no dermina noladim mutar be yiludim, ki hechi, just like, de no dermina yiludim mutar be noladim. Okay, just like if you say the yiludim is mutar be noladim, I think the noladim is mutar be yiludim. Okay, now we're going to have a question from the Torah. Okay, we're going to now see that the word noladim means both past and future. Okay, so, Amar le Rav Papa Labai, lememra de noladim de mityaldan mashma. First, they're going to say, wait a minute. How could you say that Noladim refers to the past? First, the question, Chachamim. How could you say it also refers to the past? Ela me'ata, look at this pasuk. Shnei banecha ha-noladim l'cha be'eretz Mitzrayim. Where's this from? Right, Yosef, okay? When Yaakov gives the bracha to Menashe and Ephraim, right, he says, your two sons that were born to you in Eretz Mitzrayim, what do you see? Hachanami di'it yaldan hu. Noladin doesn't mean they will be born. He didn't mean your sons who will be born to you in the future. They were already born. It means the ones who were born. Elamai di'yaldu mashma. So now they're going to say, wait, but now you're going to say that Noladin is di'it yaldu mashma on the past? Elame'ata, we're going to say the reverse now. There's another pasuk. Dichtiv, hine ben nolad lebeit David, Yoshiyahu shmo, who remembers where this is from? This is very famous. Yerubim ben Nevat, okay? Many years before Yoshiyahu, many, many, many years, okay? The beginning of Sefer Melachim, okay? Yerubim ben Nevat comes right after the Pilug HaMelucha, and he does this whole thing, and the Navi comes to him, and he says, there's going to be a Navi born, there's going to be a king born, Yoshiyahu Shmo, and he's going to break down all your Mizbachot, and he's going to ruin all this stuff, right? At the big moment that he's having his big Chanukata, his new Mikdash, you know, the Navi comes, and he says, it's going to be a Nolad Beit David, Yoshiyahu Shmo. So, Hachanami Dahava, Hachanami Dahava, what? You're going to say he was already alive? Now, here's an interesting way they phrase it. They don't say he wasn't alive. What do they say? Vaha Adayim Menashe Loba. His father wasn't even alive, or I think his grandfather was Menashe. Even his grandfather wasn't alive yet. Okay? So clearly he wasn't born, right? The first time I asked, also, I don't have a good answer, but why Menashe? Right? Why not Yoshiyahu himself wasn't born? Okay, but I think they're just trying to say even more, in a, there can't possibly be a chance he was born because his grandfather wasn't even born yet. Okay? So basically, you see that Nolad, right? First they say it must mean also past because of Ephraim and Menashe. Now it says, wait, but it also means future because of this. So, what do they say? Elamash mahachi, umash mahachi. Now it could be this or it could be that. Ubenidarim, here's the big line. Halach achar l'shom b'nei adam. What does that mean? We have to follow the way people speak. We don't follow the Torah when it comes to this, right? It's actually a fascinating statement, right? What do you mean we don't follow the Torah? We use the Torah as our guideline for everything. And now they're saying, no, ad kan. That when it comes to speech, like I said before, language develops and changes. And yes, in the time of the Gemara, maybe that's what it was. But now, that's not the way it is anymore. And this isn't, you know, we go by, I'm sorry, maybe in the time of the Torah it was like that, but now in the time of the Gemara, already things are different, and we go achar l'shom b'nei adam, and that would obviously be relevant for today. That we're not going to follow the Mishnah when it comes to this kind of halachot, right? We're going to go achar l'shom b'nei adam, and it makes a lot of sense, because if you made a statement, so we want to go by what you meant by your statement, and not by what the Torah would have meant had you said it if you were living in the time of the Torah. Okay, last line, v'chachamim omrim, so if you're talking about anyone who will or, you know, past, future, then you're talking about everybody. So again, who is excluded from what you said? Lafuke mai, lafuke dagim ve'ofot. Okay, they aren't born, right? They hatch. Thank you. They hatch. And therefore, it's not the same as being born. So because of that, they're excluded. Okay.
That's surely what
I'm talking about. Right. Exactly.